Okay, so welcome everybody. Glad to see people joining on. I'm really excited for this Shear series. We're going to go through Sefer Bereishis, parsha by parsha, and we're going to be focusing on parallels between each week's Parshas HaShavua and something else from elsewhere in Tanakh. We know the Ramban, Ma'aseh Avot, Siman Levanim, right? That so much of what happens in Sefer Bereishis is a portent of what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael through the generations. We're really going to see that brought to life in some of the coming weeks. And the idea is going to be, number one, it'll be a cool way for us to get an insight into the Parshas HaShavua every week, kind of hopefully a new angle, a new take, something fresh. Number two, it'll hopefully be an enlightening way to look at other things in Tanakh. And hopefully the methodology is also a third piece I'm really excited about, because we're not just going to be trying to just focus on the parsha and like, oh, what's the content of this week? We're going to see consistently is that this is something that Chazal often do, especially Rashi. We're going to hopefully understand many comments of Rashi, some of which we've known for like many years on a deeper level. Once we understand that Chazal, like many of these midrashim, are not just coming out of thin air. They're often not just coming out of subtle analyses of the psukim, but often Chazal are finding parallels between one area and something else, and that is something we're going to really explore week to week. So, you know, this week, for example, we're going to be focusing on Parshas Noach, so something near and dear to my heart. And I'll load up the screen share for almost everybody. Exactly. And the topic is, why are Chazal so harsh with Noah? I'll be honest, this is something that has always bothered me. Like, I get my 1 week in the sun over here, you know, and like you go to the first you go to Rashi in the beginning of the Parsha, and you can look here in source number one, and not once but twice, what seems like beautiful psuk about Noah, Rashi quotes Chazal from different midrashim who are just trashy. So Torah begins. Noach matzah chein be'enei Hashem. It's beautiful, right? Hashem likes Noach. Noach ish tzaddik. Tamim haya b'darosa. Four times we begin Parshas Noach with just Hashem being unbelievably pro Noach over here. What does Rashi do? Rashi takes these four things, and these four psukim, and we're going to see in a minute it's going to get even worse. There's lots and lots in the pshat of the psukim that talks about what an unbelievable, amazing, perfect tzaddik Noach was. And what does Rashi do? Twice he comes out of the blue. What does he say famously in the first line? Right? Some of Yishmer Rabbeinu Shadorshim Lishvach. Some of our rabbis praised him. And some Yishdorshim Lignai. Some of the sages analyze these psukim in a derogatory fashion. And this is maybe the more well-known one, says Rashi. Lefi doro hayat tzaddik, Avraham lo Noach in his own generation came off as a tzaddik, but had he been in the generation of Avraham Avinu, he would have been thought of as a nobody. Lo hayanechshav klum. And the question to put on the table right away is, where do they get that from? Where does it come from in the psukim? Like, we can read the pasuk very hyper literally. That happens to be one thing that Chazal do. Often drashos are just very, very literal reads of psukim. And you could say, Noach, tamim haya bidorosa. But the pshat is obvious that the Torah is saying how wonderful Noach was. He found favor in the eyes of Hashem. He was righteous. He was the most righteous one in his generation. When we call somebody the Gadol Hador, right? Has anybody ever heard of some of the Gadol, you know, the art scroll biography of the Gadol Hador? Oh, he's the Gadol Hador. What does that mean? His generation, but had he been living in the generation of someone else, he would have not have been the Gadol Hador. Obviously, that's not the straightforward meaning of Gadol Hador. So the straightforward meaning of Tamim Haya Bedorosav is certainly that he was just all around excellent. Hashem is with Noah. Where does it come from then? This line, Yesh Dorshin Lignai, that Noah would have been a nobody had he been in the generation of Avraham. Okay, I see somebody in the chat mentioned Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmul Bedoro. But come on the level of chat, when we call somebody the Gadol Hador, we are emphasizing it's a pro that person statement, right? We should all aspire to one day be called the Gadol Hador. And if that happens for us, and then somebody else runs in and says, yes, because you live in a lousy generation, when they're just like ruining the party, right? But we should appreciate there is a clash between this classic Rashi, quoting this classic Chazal, and the pshat of the Pesach. And what we want to know is to figure out where that's going to come from. And spoiler alert, right? Rashi is already tipping his hand. The Medrash is already tipping his hand that Chazal are seeing a comparison between Noach and Avram. So the first part of the shiur is going to be to focus and try to unpack this relationship between Noach and Avram Avinu. The second half of the shiur is we're going to turn and we're going to look at some very, very interesting parallels and gaps between Noach and Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? If we suspect that maybe Noah, the Chazal are zeroing in on the Noah-Avraham relationship, that is confirmed by the second Rashi. Again, right there on the Pasuk, what does Rashi say on Es Elokim Hisalech Noah? Once again, Rashi has to trash on Noah. It's not his gracious Rabbah. What does Rashi say? Avram, Omer, Hisalachti Lefanav. So Avram is described as I walked before him. This is a quote. Eliezer is in the land of Haran, and he is quoting Avraham to Rivka's family. And Avraham says, I walked before Hashem. So what's the difference that Rashi points out? Avraham walked before Hashem, but Esa Elohim Hishalech Noah. All right, Hashem like had Noah walk with him. So Rashi explains. Noach sahayat sarach sa'ad l'somcho. Noach needed a support. Aval Avram is chazek b'tzidko me'elav. But Avram was independently righteous. So once again, we're taking what seems like a lovely pasuk about Noach. Es Elokim Hisalech Noach. And Rashi quotes the Medrash, which just tells us, compared to Avraham, Noach was really not so impressive. So what exactly is this trying to draw out? Now, it gets even worse on the level of the pshat. If you look, and I won't go through it all inside, you can on your own if you want, but the Dot Mikra commentary, so it talks about what Noach, how great Noach was. Just the beginning, they say, you know, Yachid hu Noach b'mikra, oh, Noach is unique in the history of Tanakh. Right, and they go on and on. They say like Noach was he was a tzaddik tamim. I mean, Hashem testifies that he's a tzaddik. The Torah says matzachin be'enei Hashem. The Torah says that Hashem is telling him his own secrets. You know, in a couple of weeks, Parshas Vayera. So Hashem is going to say, look, Avram is so great. I need to tell Avram what I'm going to do to Sodom. Well, the exact same thing Hashem did this week with Noach. He decides that Noach is on the level. I need to tell him that I'm going to destroy the world. He gets many, many prophecies. Hashem speaks to Noach many times, more times than even I think Yitzhak Avinu, seven times, I think they said over here. He's given extensive commandments, of which he fulfills all of them. And anything Hashem tells Noach to do, Noach does, and he does to the letter. Right. And for some reason, the Torah tells us like the exact measurements of the Teva and Noach. You know, anything that Hashem tells him to do, he fulfills all of it. And the Dot Mikra points out, is a nice insight they have here, that Noach is even given the special formulation, Vaydaber Elokim El Noach Lemor. Now, we're so used to hearing the Pasuk, Vaydaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor, that nothing really rings a bell for us. But they point out that Hashem only speaks that way to somebody when he gives them a mitzvah. Lemor. Hashem spoke to him saying, we know what that means. That means that, right, that Hashem is giving Moshe a mitzvah. So Noach is in the very, very, very select group of people who are not only given commandments themselves, you know, Hashem says do X, but they're given mitzvot. Right? Hashem spoke to Noach saying, we know we have the Sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach. So Noach is a tzaddik, matzachin. Hashem is giving him secrets. Hashem is giving him commandments. He's fulfilling the commandments. He's being given mitzvah for all time. He's like the first lawgiver that we have. Noach is absolutely amazing. Yachid hu Noach b'mikra ot. And so why on earth can it be? How can it be that, you know, and Rashi's quoting two minutes, but we know Rashi happens to be, we'll talk about Rashi for a second. Look what Rashi quotes. Rashi quotes a Medrash Tanchuma, and he quotes a Bereishis Rabbah. There are many, many, many Midrashim that Rashi could quote if he wants to. What's he doing? He is looking for the midrashim. He's cherry picking, except it's the opposite of cherries, because cherries are sweet and delicious. Right? He's, I don't know, crab apple picking? Like, you know, he's finding the midrashim that bash on Noah, where the this pasuk is wonderful for Noah. Then in general, the pasukim seem to be wonderful for Noah. But Rashi is identifying the theme in Chazal, which are critical, and particular because they are comparing him to Avraham Avinu. Right. Now, I think the way when Noah and Avram are normally contrasted, so what do we hear people usually contrast between Noah and Avram? Right, they both experience the world being destroyed. Exactly, Avram prayed for the world, and Noah didn't pray for the world. Right, Avraham is a ish chesed, and Noah is not an ish chesed. Right, I think the way it's normally presented. I think though, as we if we will progress and look at the real contrast between them, we'll see a sharper distinction between Noah and Avraham. And I think it actually has a more frightening lesson for us than just the question of chesed and do we daven first or don't. More frightening lesson, as we'll see. I'm going to scroll down on the screen share for the over here. And if it turns to page 2 in the source sheet, so we should now take a look for a second at the two covenants, right? There's a bris of Noah and there's a bris of Avraham Avinu. And if we think about it for a minute, and the print ones don't have color, so I have to get a little more creative with the print ones. You know, everyone who's on Zoom here, so you can see it's black and white, and we had to get creative with like different fonts because we didn't have color printing available. But on the digital, this group could clearly see some of the links between the two covenants. But we can identify them. Number one, the word bris appears over and over again. Right? It's boxed in each one of these. Torah is driving home very, very carefully. Hashem is making a bris with Avram, is making a bris with Noah. These are two covenants which are contracted. Each bris also has a number of similar words and a number of similar themes. So for example, what's the first thing that Hashem tells Noah in Pasuk Aleph? Peru uruhu umulu asaras, right? Part of the covenant is going to be that mankind is going to multiply and explode. Hashem tells Avraham basically the same thing in Pasuk Beis on the left side of the column, right? Adna brisi bini ubeinecha va'arbe oscha. He repeats that again in Pasuk Vav. Avraham is going to be extremely fruitful. That's a piece of the bris. So there's a bris, there's a covenant, there's multiplication as an aspect of the covenant. Each bris is referred to as a bris olam. Now it's a bris olam, a daros olam. This is an everlasting covenant. Both of them are described that way. Each bris is not just a covenant, but Hashem emphasizes it is a bris between. So Hashem tells Avraham in Pasuk Beis, "Enav risi beini ubeinecha." It's a bris between you and me. And Hashem tells Noach in Pasuk Tes, "Ani yinirikim es brisi etchem ve'azarachem achareichem." Right? This is a bris once again between you and between you and me. Two more things that are very important that the covenants have in common. The kares, right? We'll come back to this, we'll talk about the differences, but the word kares, being cut off, appears in each bris. For Noach, it's Hashem's vow never again to destroy the world. So he says in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Lo yukares es kol basaro mimei hamabul, I'm never going to destroy the world. And left column, what does Hashem tell Abraham? Anybody who fails to fulfill the covenant, right? Anybody who doesn't have bris milah is one of only two positive mitzvot which have a penalty of kares, carbon pesach and bris milah, the only two positive mitzvot where there is a penalty of kares. And finally, what's the last thing that each that the so lichros literally means to cut, right? So lichros bris, that would mean that's used to cut, exactly. You say cut a deal, cut a bris. Right, but the context here of being cut off, of being destroyed, lo yikares kol basar and nichrasa hanefesh ahi. That's the bad version of a kares. And what's the last thing that they have in common? maybe there are others, but this is what jumps to my mind at least, is the sign. There's a very prominent aspect of each covenant is the Os Bris, right? Which word is also used in Pasuk Yud Gimel by Parshas by Noach. What's the Os Bris? What's the sign of the covenant? Of course, the rainbow. And what's the Os Bris from Pasuk Yud Aleph in Parshas Lech Lecha? The Bris Milah. So we have a covenant. We have a covenant between man and God. We have a covenant that's going to last forever. We have a covenant with a sign. We have a covenant where kares is attached. And we have a covenant which includes the multiplication of project. It seems like, one of the kind of dangers in looking for parallels is, anybody can kind of try to darshan up one or two. But once we get a sufficient list that it gets pretty compelling, it gets pretty undeniable that Hashem has two covenants, one of Parshas Noach, one of Parshas Lech Lecha, and they seem to have an awful lot in common. And I think that this is one of the major points which is indicating to Chazal that we should be holding Avraham and Noach up against each other.
Now, it's a command to Noach to do, whereas to Abraham, it's a promise that Hashem is going to fulfill for him.
Interesting.
So it's almost as if he's telling Noach, you've got to do your part here. part's up to you, but Hashem is giving Abraham a promise.
Right. Right. On the other hand, Avram has been trying his best to do that for years, right? And so he's been complaining, so it wouldn't make so much sense for Hashem to give Avram like a commandment. Avram's like, I've been trying. Because it's funny you mentioned that, because we'll shift now to look at the differences between the two.
Noah, I guess, old, but he didn't have any children himself to the model. So it's improved, but he didn't often actually do it. And he couldn't. Based on age.
I guess, right, he himself does not do it. Yeah, I don't know when the fertility window changed back in Northland. Right. Yeah, they're definitely there, 7 billion people now? Right, so, yeah, we've done pretty solidly on that. Yeah, seriously. We then need to ask, Chazal are clearly looking at the differences between Avram and Noach. So let's begin to wonder, what are some of the differences between the covenants over here? If anyone on Zoom wants to jump off of, wants to unmute and suggest something, could also put in the chat. But maybe if someone wants to verbalize, definitely feel free. I have a list of a few, but take a look for a second, and we'll talk about it. This is going to be where the rubber really hits the road, right? Where are the lessons that we're going to draw?
Noach doesn't seem to be given any choices. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy the world and save him, and that's it.
So I totally agree. I think one of the major differences, we can even take it one step further. Not only does Noach not have any choices, what is Noach doing here? But the actual covenant piece, the actual bris, is just Hashem says, here's the deal. The covenant is, I will not destroy the world. Not a two-way street. It's not a two-way street. Noach is a passive recipient. This bris can't be undone. Hashem makes a promise, and the rainbow is the sign. Right? The rainbow is the sign that Hashem will not destroy the world. So it was a rainy day today. We knew that it was not going to end in a flood. Why? Because that was the promise that Hashem made. And there is no going back. In stark contrast, the bris of Abraham, not only does it require Abraham to do something, it requires Abraham to do something which is extremely painful and difficult to do, mortally dangerous.
Test.
It's a test. Yeah, right. One of the tests. Well, exactly, it's a test. It's one of the tests. Is he going to pull this off? And the Torah specifically flags and highlights what's going to happen to somebody who doesn't do it. Pasuk Yudalid. He has rejected my covenant. There is no concept of rejecting the covenant when it comes to Noah, because it's just, this is the way the world is going to be. So one covenant with Noah is, this is the way the world is going to be. And the covenant with Abraham is, here is an obligation, here is something that you need to do. And that then, I think, unlocks some of the other major differences over here. Who is the bris with? The bris with Avraham is a bris between Hashem and Avraham Avinu. Bini ubeinecha. But in the moment, right now, it's Hashem and Avraham. It gets expanded, right? Later on, when Hashem then says, this bris will be expanded. Right now it's me and you. We're the ones here in the room. It's not a covenant with, doesn't seem to be a covenant with Ishmael. I mean, that's, you know, could be discussed. What's the mitzvah for Arabs nowadays to have a bris milah? But in the beginning, it's just Beinu Beinacha. Who's the bris, though, with when it comes to Noah? So Pasuk Tess told with us.
The bris is with Hashem in the world.
The world, not exactly. It's beyond humanity. It's a universe. Ace kol nefesh achaya asher etchem. The bris is what the animal kingdom is.
Wow.
So it's a bris between Hashem. It's really a bris between Hashem and nature, the animal kingdom, and humanity and Noah. That is a complete, which the two points fit together, because if it's a bris with the animal kingdom, it makes sense that there's nothing for them to do. What's Hashem doing? Hashem is recreating the world. He's redefining what nature is going to look like. So there's no obligation for us. There's no mitzvah. Noach's bris is a bris that's all about the natural world. What's the os? What's the sign of the bris of Noach? The keshet, the rainbow. Exactly, right? So a natural phenomenon. It's all about what nature is going to look like. The bris of Avraham is all about transcending what nature is going to be. Nature is X, but Avraham, you need to do something. Exactly, you're born with the foreskin. You're born with the foreskin, and you need to take it off. It needs to be removed. And by definition, somebody could fail to do that. So Noach then is, if we look through this lens, Noach really represents the natural world, and Avraham represents transcending the natural world. Now, it also happens to be, by the way, the penalty for Avraham's bris is kares. What's kares? Being cut off from Olam Haba. Right, so this, I mean, this is a little bit of a speculation here, but it could be that even the idea of transcendence is so baked into the bris of Avraham Avinu that what's the consequence? The reward for the bris is if you fail to observe Avram's bris, kares, the lack of entering Olam Haba, is a natural consequence, because all you're doing by not getting a bris milah is returning to nature. So if the links and the contrasts between Avraham and Noah really can be found in the two covenants that they have, so I would argue that we should not be looking at just the question of Hachnasas Orchim or Noah with the Dor HaMabul versus Avraham with Sodom. Why? Because Sodom doesn't happen until Parshas Vayera. All the Hachnasas Orchim doesn't really happen until Parshas Vayera. What we're seeing here, the bris, the covenant difference, where Avraham is, you know, I mean, he literally becomes Avram, right? His name is, even his name is changed. Talk about nature versus transcending nature. Avram gets a different name by the end of this. Noach never changes his name, right? Avram's name is going to change. It sounds like everything that's already, whatever Avram has done is already here. And the idea really is, apparently, that Avraham is somebody who is a man beyond nature. And then, Chazal, we have to take a step back. And for all of the closeness that Noah has to Hashem, apparently we need to reevaluate the personality of Noah. And Noah is more a neutral personality, just a person of nature. As opposed to Avraham, what Avraham is all about is transcending the natural world, and that is his dveikus to Hashem. So that's where Chazal are coming from, I think. They see Noach, they see Avraham. Well, if Avraham is the first person who cleaves to Hashem, Noach didn't do that. So then why was Hashem with Noach? Well, the Matzachin, the Eselokim is Halach Noach. The answer is going to be because in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man was king. In the land where everybody else was a disaster. So the person who at least represents the basic neutral morality of the natural world, that actually is what Noach was all about. Okay, now this gets like a scary. I think if we think this way, is let's look at the aftermath of each bris, because we're gonna see here also once again a total divergence between what happens to Avraham right afterwards and what happens to Noah right afterwards. We're gonna see there are very compelling parallels, which once again, just like the covenants had compelling parallels, which only enlarge the differences, the same exact thing is going to be true for the aftermath of the bris. Right after Noach's bris, so, you know, he's going to get drunk, and unclear what exactly is happening there, but it doesn't end well. Avram's bris, what happens right after Avram's bris? He's in the tent, and he sees the malachim, and he's told he's going to have a son. Okay. So we can identify really three, and this is not long, you know, the Noach story especially is not a long story, but only in these few psukim we can identify at least three major parallels. Number one, there's a tent in each of these, right? It's right after the bris, we have a tent, we have an ohel. There's the question of food and drink in each bris. And there also is, very importantly, the question of seeing. Avraham, the reason why it's Parshas Vayira Elohim Hashem Elokim Ameh, then Hashem, Avraham, Vayisa Inav, Vayar Vinei Shlosha Anashim. What do we have over by Noah? We have Vayar Cham Avi Kanan, Es Arvas Aviv. Cham sees the nakedness of his father. So we have a tent in each story, we have seeing in each story, we have food in each story, you know. But if we take a step back, though, it really, everything is totally inverted. Noach goes inside the tent, even though he belongs outside, right? Noach's job is to repopulate the world, and instead he gets drunk and he goes back inside. Avraham leaves the tent, even though what should he be doing? By resting. He should be staying home and resting. So Noach belongs outside the tent, he's going in. Avraham belongs inside the tent, and he's going out. What's being seen over here? Noach is seen naked in his natural state by his son. And what does Avraham see? Malachim, right? First HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then Malachim. Noach is seeing the supernatural, and Noach is being seen in his most debased and most natural state. And what's being done with the food? Noach is taking the alcohol to get himself drunk, and Avraham is taking the food to feed others, right? Who he thinks are people, who by the way also happen to be Malach. And the last piece with each of these two stories afterwards, what happens with their progeny? There's news with the progeny, or the progeny in each one of these. Noach curses his offspring, and then he dies. Right? He curses his son, and then he dies. That's the end of Noah. Avram is told that his new son is going to be born. So it's like Noah's future ends right here. And Avraham's future, Avraham's story, is born after the bris. So Noah has his natural bris, and then it all ends right afterwards. He gets drunk, he goes into the tent, he's seen naked, he curses his son, he dies. Avraham is leaving the tent, he's seeing Malachim, he's giving food to them, he's being told he's going to have a child, he's going to have Yitzhak, and that birth, Avram's story is, there's way more left. This is really, you know, like many ways, Avram's career is only starting now. I mean, he's been named Avraham for what, like 3 days, right? He's been Avram his whole life. It's a new second life that Avraham has over here. Right. No, yeah, right. The I was pointing out that Avraham and Noach lived, there was some overlap between them in terms of the literal 58. Right. Another way maybe we should be thinking of them being linked. I think one more way we should be thinking of the divergence between Avram and Noah, and then after we say that, we'll have to ask what exactly it means. What exactly did Ham do to Noah? Rashi quotes two possibilities. Yesh Rabbi Seinu Omrim Sirso, either Ham castrated Noah, or Yesh Omrim Riva'o, or he raped Noah. Either one of those nicely fits into the contrast between the world of Noah and the world of the Bris Milah. The Rambam says that the whole purpose of the Bris Milah, it really focuses on Gilei Arayos and the Jewish Kedusha in the realm of the sexual world. In stark contrast, we have Ham, who is raping his own father. Mishkav Zachor and incest and rape all wrapped up into one. And even more poignant, Sirsa, I mean, so if he castrated him, so we have Avram and Noach, and each one is having, I guess we could say, surgery happening, but one is, well, if one is the end of Avram, of Noach, his inability to replicate any further. The other one is the grounds which Hashem says here is the bris, which is going to lead to the multiplication of all of Bnei Yisrael. Now, so we've seen so far, and this is the end of the sources for Noach and Avraham, and then we'll tackle Noach and Moshe, if people still have stamina. This, by the way, is going to be the longest shiur of the series, I think, because there's just so much to say about Noach, it can't hold back. We've seen Chazal identifying that despite what on the surface level seems to be lovely things about Noah. They said, nope, if he was in Javan's generation, he'd be a nobody. We saw by contrasting the related covenants that Noah really just represents the clean, natural world, and that the bris with Noah is just a bris with nature. And Avram is all about the ability to transcend that, the realm of Kedusha. The scary thing I think that we see from the aftermath of the bris is what happens if we only try to stay within the realm of Noah and we do not strive for the level of Avraham. What if somebody says, I'm going to stay in neutral? I will just, the natural world, natural morality is all that I'm going to try. I'm not going to go for more. Basic, secular, natural ethics. The immediate aftermath of Noah's bris seems to indicate that that's not sustainable. Doesn't seem sustainable. Without the Ribono Shel Olam in the picture, you can't have that stable, nice, clean society. It lasts for Noach about 4 minutes, and then he gets drunk, and then we have assault, and we have rape, and we have incest, and we have slavery, and we have the whole family falling apart, and then Noach dies. The impact seems to be that Noach can't be, he's a building block, but the bris that Hashem makes with Noach, it can't be it. If that's all we stick with, it's going to collapse. And what happens immediately after Noach's death? What's the next part story happen? Parsh Noach, I guess. We have the Dor HaFlaga, right? The generation of Migdal Bavel, where what do the people do? We'll get along, we'll be friendly. All the stealing and lying and murdering that they did in the Dor HaMabul, that's going to go out the window. We're all going to get along. Just, we're going to rebel against God. We're going to rebel against God, however exactly that's happening. It's not sustainable. It is not sustainable. It's not sustainable for the Dor HaFlaga. That tower is going to be destroyed. It's not sustainable for Noah. His whole world falls apart. My father always likes to say, spiritually, you can't stay in neutral. If you're in neutral, that means you're going backwards. And Avraham tells us that we're either striving and pushing and looking for transcendence, we're going for the bris milah, we're going for more, or we're going backwards. We begin with the bris of Noah, but all that does is give us a foundation for the bris of Avraham to add on top. And if we stay at the level of Noah, then even the level of Noah is not going to remain. And think that's what emerges from the comparison and the contrast between them. So we can really see why Chazal are seeing this relationship. We can see why Chazal are Doresh Noach Lignai, that there's criticism there. And we can also see why it is so important. As much as I hate to admit it, there's a reason why. The very first thing Rashi wants you to know about Noach is don't look at him as your role model. There are good things there. But the first thing to know is if you want to know what the role model is going to be, we have to wait. Because it turns out that if you really examine it, the worldview that Noach stands for ultimately is not going to stand. Okay. Any thoughts? Questions?
I'm wondering. I'm wondering though. We have to. You say it's not sustainable, and obviously, of course, there's examples. But then we say, okay, you have the Noahide laws for the non-Jews. So, I mean, then you would have to say, but there is some sustainability because we have the seven, B'nai Noah. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, if we say that not sustainable, and then you have the laws of Noah, I mean, and for the non-Jews, but then it wouldn't be sustainable for them. But yet we say that that's enough, that they can, just go by the laws of Noah. You know what I'm trying to say?
100%. So we then need to revisit the seven Noahide laws and consider what's in there. Avodah Zarah is in there, right? So what exactly does Avodah Zarah just mean? No worshiping idols? Is it possible to construct, and this is a really, for modern Western society, really interesting question, is it possible to have a society which is actually secular but nothing is worshipped? I think we have to question that. We could look at all sorts of secular idols that we see nowadays. I think if Avodah Zarah is on the list of the Noahide commandments, that means they have to be following God, which, by the way, is the very first thing that Noah originally does. Right, the failure of Noah is, what does he do when he first comes out of the Teva? First thing he does is he builds a Mizbeach. He does try to connect to Hashem, but it doesn't stick. Right? He then becomes, and Chazal flag this line, he just becomes the Ish HaAdamah. So the seven Noahide commandments do not assume that Hashem is out of the picture. I mean, the Ramban thinks that Dinim, the mitzvah of Dinim, includes the whole world of Choshen Mishpat, 25% of Shulchan Aruch. Is in there. So I think it's a very, very, very important point. We often just talk about the seven Noahide commandments as, that's secular society. It's not true. It's not just secular society. It's a basic functioning society. Gilei Arayos is in there. Forbidden sexual relationships. Look what happens to Noah 5 minutes later. It all goes out. Just like the animal kingdom. I think it's a very, very important point. Very, very important point. Okay. So let's turn to Moshe. This is a little bit less well known, but Chazal are all over this one, and here I think the lessons I think are a little more self explanatory. There's a funny Gemara I want to start with. Source number five. So Torah said this was technically Parshas Bereishis, the end of Parshas Bereishis, and Hashem said, Lo yodun ruchi ba'adam la'olam, b'shagam hu basar. He is flesh, v'hayu yamav me'ya v'esrim shana. So he's going to live for 120 years. So there's a funny Gemara. Gemara says, Moshe min haTorah minayin. Where do you know about Moshe from the Torah? I don't know. Where do you know Moshe from the Torah? Like, how many times is Moshe appear in the Torah? What does the Gemara even mean? Right? Exactly. And the Gemara says, Bishagam hu basar. What is that talking about? What does, since he is also flesh, have to do with Moshe Rabbeinu? So Rashi says, look at Rashi on the Gemara right there, says, I'll tell you what exactly the Gemara means. Number one, Bishagam bigamatria kama Moshe. Right? You have the mem and the shin from Moshe, and instead of a hey, you just have a bez and a gimel. So that's 345, right? 345. So Vishagam is Moshe Gematria. Exactly as Levi said, the lifespan is going to be 120 years. Okay? So so Noah, Moshe is ultimately going to come from humanity. What the Gemara seems to be saying is the whole reason why Hashem saves the world is not because of Noah, but actually Hashem is saving the world because one day Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be born, right? But so Moshe is being discovered here in the story of Noah. Now, there's another, I mean, there are so many, but there's another medrash, right? The Beis Yosef, but here in source number 6, which once again puts Noah and Moshe together. And what does the medrash say? Chaviv Moshe Minoah. Moshe is more beloved than Noah. I mean, okay, even the biggest Noah fan is going to admit that one. So what's the point? What are we trying to get at? Noah, Mishnikra Ish Tzadik, Nikra Ish Adama. Noah begins his life as a tzadik, and by the end, he's a man of the soil. As we said, he's just a man who by the end just represents nature. Aval Moshe, Mishnikra Ish Mitzri, Nikra Ish Elokim. At the beginning of Moshe's life, when he's discovered by the daughters of Yisro, they call him an Egyptian man. And by the end of his life, in Zos HaBracha, he was called the man of God. So what again are Chazal getting at with this, with these two links? You know, I'm sure there are many people we could find in Tanakh who are called Ish something. There's got to be something more than just, oh, Moshe is greater than Noah, the Chazal want to flag for.
That's where
Okay, so Anta is saying that we can emphasize the question of growth. There's no question that's correct. That just like we saw in the previous comparison between Avraham and Noah, the idea that you're either striving or you're falling, and this medrash in particular drives that message home for Noah. I want to ask though, why Moshe in particular? You know, if it was just a medrash, fine. We're going to see more going forward. In particular, this Gemara and Chulin, Moshe min Atar Minayin. Why are we trying to dig up Moshe in the story of Noah? Now, happens to be that throughout Sefer Shemos in particular, really Sefer Shemos, the parallels between Moshe and Noah go on and on. And I put a list of like 19 over here, so definitely not going to go through all of them. We'll just hit the highlights in the table over here. Way up in the top, the only two times we find a teva in the, I think in all of Tanakh, I could be wrong. Definitely in the Torah, I think all of Tanakh. What are the two tevas we have? We have the teva of Noah and the teva of Moshe. Yocheved puts Noah, Moshe in a teva. Is that a coincidence that those are only two tevas? Again, if there was only one data point, right? This whole methodology, we're going to look at parallels. One point is not enough. We need enough that like it's compelling. 40 days, 40 nights. 40 days, 40 nights of rain. Noah has in a teva when he's secluded in a teva. And Moshe, of course, he's on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. 40 nights. I forget who someone put these. I'm not the only people who put these together. By the way, this linkage has been pointed out by others. Yeah, I'm sure, and she and probably others like this particular point is like definitely others have definitely done. Hashem tells Noah, in 7 days, I'm going to bring rain. Right. So Noah has 7 days warning. Then he'll go into the teva. And then there's going to be 40 days of rainfall. Moshe, same story. 7 days, right? After 7 days, and there's a machlokas in Chazal, where the 7 days and the 40 days are. But Moshe, we have 7 days of preparation. Vayikra el Moshe by Yom HaShvi'i mitoch ha'anan. Probably the simplest way to read the pasuk is that after the Shechina was there for 6 days, on the sixth day, B'nai Yisrael get the Torah, Vav Sivan, then on Zion Sivan, they get Moshe goes inside the Anan. But Tanam, I haven't argued about that one, but we have 40, we have 7. We talked earlier about, when we were talking in the good old days, about how wonderful Noach is, that Noach fulfills all the mitzvahs that Hashem has for. The Torah uses the same formulation. Right? Noach did just like everything that Hashem commanded. And by the way, these are the only two structures which are commanded in detail. The structure of the Mishkan and the structure of the Teva. Hashem says, here's exactly how I want Noach to build the Teva. Here's exactly how I want Hashem to build the Mishkan. And in each one, we're told again and again and again that Noach did everything kasher tziva Hashem, kasher tziva Hashem, kasher tziva Hashem. With Moshe, it's the exact same thing. I mean, for Kudei, Mar Vitzah Parsha, the Torah says again and then, again and again, they did kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Kachol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe, kain asu. Three more. These are the two people who find favor in the eyes of Hashem. Noach matzachim b'nei Hashem, and Hashem says to Moshe in the aftermath of the golden calf, this is the story of the Yigil Midos, right? Matasichin b'nai v'idacha b'shem. Okay, so he's going to get the Yud Gimel Midos. Etzem Ayom Hazeh, Etzem Ayom Hazeh. Noach goes into the Teva. Moshe takes Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And one last one, each one involves Hashem changing his mind. The two times that Hashem changes his mind, Vaynachem Hashem. So one is in the Noach story. One is in the Moshe story. Except this last one of Vaynachem Hashem points to the key difference between them, right? And here is where the difference gets pretty obvious, but we should just build it up to something very cool. How is Hashem changing his mind? With Moshe, Vayinachem Hashem al Arash Yadiber Lasos Liyamo. He was going to destroy Bnei Yisrael. Ah, he changed his mind. He's not going to destroy Bnei Yisrael. What's the mind changing he has in the Noach story? The exact opposite. He regrets having created man, and he decides that he's going to destroy. So we go from creation to destruction, destruction to creation. Midrashim discuss this at length. So in Dvarim Rabbah, there's a debate between, they have Noach and Moshe debating who is greater, you or me. And what does Moshe say? Moshe says to Noach, he says, Noach, we're like two captains of ships. Who's greater? The captain who survived the shipwreck and got and swam ashore with his boat sinking, or the captain who navigates the waves and brings the boat in to the dock? So again, like, why Chazal are zeroing in on Noah versus Moshe. Precious Rabban, source 8. Ari Chanina bar Papa, Noach was only left alive because Hashem saw that Moshe was going to come for him. Rashi's Rabban, source 9, similar to the Avram story, except instead of it being Noach in the generation of Abraham, what we have in the Rashi's Rabba, it's had Noach lived in the generation of Moshe, he would have been a nobody. It's interesting, I also mentioned Shmuel and Moshe often have a lot in common. And then the most damning one for Noah, before we get to the real key takeaway from all this, is number 10, Medrash Tanhuma over here. So the Medrash says, we should read this, these three lines inside. So Vayitakara, Moshe, Noah makes a vineyard. Says the Medrash, Ze'achem ha'yaba b'nei adam she'eschilu barba dvarim. It's one of four people who founded four things. Who are the four people? Noah, Avraham, Moshe, and Bilam. Moshe and Avram, obviously good. Bilam, obviously bad. That's a problem because Noach then is being put seemingly together with Bilam. And what does the Medrash say? Noach hischil b'netia, b'shechras, b'arira, b'avdus. Noach began with planting grapes. This Medrash seems critical of drinking, getting drunk, cursing, he curses his son, and slavery. Avram hischil b'zikna, b'yisurin, b'pundak, b'ligta. So Avraham, with old age and persevering through pain and hosting guests, and Ligta. I did not know what that was. I looked it up in the Jastro. It's actually legacy, because he bequeaths his property to his descendants, right? So we can look at Avram and Noah. Avram, really honestly, here is like, you know, the good Ben Adam Lechavero, and Noah is just a profaning of the world. There's nothing there's nothing supernatural in either one of these, right? Noah and Avram, they're both just maximizing the natural world. Avram is maximizing the natural world. You know, he's hosting people, he's having children, he's giving to them the wisdom of old age. Noah has taken the natural world, he's debasing it, he's getting drunk, he's cursing people, and we have slavery. Then the Medrash Tanhuma continues with Moshe and Bilam. Moshe and Bilam are both going beyond into the supernatural. With Moshe, it's Kedusha, and with Bilam, it's active profanity. Moshe Yisrael Bekehuna, Beduchen, Bekarbanos, Ubetorah. Moshe gave us the priesthood and sacrifices in Torah. And then Bilam, what did Bilam give us? Bilam Yisrael Bekuba, Bekuvia, Beludim, Uksamim. Bilam gave us brothels and dice playing. What is Ludim? I do not remember offhand. And Ksamim is, of course, magic. So the Medrash is putting, I mean, this is so harsh, it's putting Noah and Bilam on the same side, the debaser and the profaner of the natural world, and then Avram and Moshe on the same side. It's all coming together. What is the core? Again, beyond just Moshe saves the world and Noah doesn't save the world. Moshe davens on behalf of Bnei Israel and Noah doesn't. We could take this to one last very, very important level. The Chazal in the Medrash Tanhuma see the Mishkan as a Gan Eden in miniature. The Ramban actually talks about this in Source 11. This is in the Ramban's introduction to Shemos. He says this is the real goal of Sefer Shemos, to get back to the way things originally were. It used to be that Hashem's presence was there, dwelling with us. By the time we have the Mishkan, we get that back. So the whole role of Shabbos, linguistic parallels between them. The Medrash goes in detail through different parts of the Mishkan, which resemble different parts of Gan Eden. The most obvious example is the Kruvim. You have the Kruvim guarding the core of the Mishkan, the Aron Kodesh. You have the Kruvim guarding Gan Eden. A number of different examples. But the Gan Eden is, the Mishkan is a Gan Eden recreated, the place where Hashem and man can once again reconnect in Olam Hazeh. So, as a result of Moshe davening on behalf of Bnei Israel and doing everything he does in Sefer Shemos, he ends up successfully recreating Gan Eden. There is an incredible Targum Yonasan, and this will be the last source with this, we'll close. What is Noah doing when he plants that vineyard? What is he doing? Why is he doing this? Why does he want a vineyard? So, you know, Targum Yonasan often will give you more than just a dry translation. Targum Yonasan says, on the pasuk, Noah, the man of the earth, planted a vineyard. So, Vishari Noah, the mehevi gavar palach ba'ara. So he wanted to plant in the earth. Okay, fine. The ashkach gufna de mushchei nara min gininusa de Eden. He found a vine with the river coming out of Gan Eden. That's on the pasuk. The river of Gan Eden is coming out of here. B'natzvei lekarma, he planted his vineyard there. Ubebe yona inaitzt uvishilt invin litzarnuyen. And then because the vineyard was coming from Gan Eden, it developed very, very quickly. I mean, the vine takes very, very long to develop. You read the story of Noach, it's like overnight. He plants the vineyard, boom, the grapes are ready, they're ripe, and he gets drunk. So Targum Yonasan says, Noach went to Gan Eden, he planted the vineyard, it happened right away, and then he got drunk. What's Targum Yonasan getting at? And this is not Lipsuk. What's he getting at? Targum Yonasan is seeing, what is Noach doing? He's, what happens after this? He takes off his clothing and he loses his das, he loses his mind. So what's Noach trying to do? Targum Yonasan is saying, Noach is trying, in the aftermath of the destruction of the world, he wants to go back to Gan Eden. Targum Yonasan literally has him going to the gates of Gan Eden. Okay. Adam and Chava eat from the Eitz Hadas. So I will eat from the fruit which removes my Das. I'll just undo what Adam and Chava did And if I undo everything they did, I lose my das, I eat the different food, I take off my clothes, I will be able to go back into Gan Eden. But that's not the way to do it, right? There is a way to get to Gan Eden. We have to contrast Moshe and Noah. The world has been recreated. But what is the way to get back into Gan Eden? Not by going back to some original, premortal, natural state. Not by trying to reclaim the original natural innocence of Adam and Chava. That's gone. For better or for worse, that's gone. What is the way going forward to successfully recreate Gan Eden? Not by us entering the garden, but by creating a world where Hashem can come down and be with us. And that is exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu is able to pull off over the course of Sefer Shemos. We have created a world, except it's not just for Moshe Rabbeinu as an individual. It is Moshe Rabbeinu as the leader of all of Bnei Yisrael. So we have, again, right, these links between Noach and Moshe, the Chazal are flagging and flagging and flagging. And if we pick at it and pick at it and analyze and see what are the core idea we're trying to get out of this, it is, what is the leader going to be? Is he going to be somebody who just tries to run back to the natural world? Or is it going to be somebody who takes everybody with him to bring us back to Hashem? And not being backwards looking, which ultimately Zanach was all about, but being forward looking, what is going to be the solution going forward? How can I not just go back to go the way things were, but how can I bring Hashem into my world, which is what Moshe Rabbeinu stands for? Okay, so I think we'll stop here. Hope everybody enjoyed. And Mir Hashem, looking forward to more learning next week. Shkach, everybody.
That was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
Thank you. Good night.
Night.